Session number 10934, Reel 1.
First of all, about where you were born and something about your family background, please.
I was born on the 10th of March, 1918, right at the very end of the World War I. At that time, my father was at the front line as a fighting man, an infantryman, and when he came back, he saw me the first time late in 1918. My father's family and my mother's family are from Württemberg, from Swabia, and these are old families, and the tribe goes way far, way back in history. My father was a, let's say, a middle class merchant. He was very successful, but the family was not very wealthy. And in this area and situation, I grew up. I had a sister, an older 4 years old sister, which is still alive. Certainly my both parents died. My father died at the age of 66 during World War II when I was in operation and when I haven't seen him for 1.5 years. And my mother died after the war.
Where were you educated?
I was born in the Black Forest in a small village, Gaggenau, but my parents moved to Stuttgart. And when I was 3 years old, so my memories go back to Stuttgart, and I consider Stuttgart as my hometown. And I was brought up in Stuttgart and educated at school. After the elementary school, I attended what we call the classic gymnasium, in which I was taught 9 years Latin and 5 years Greek and 3 years English, and the emphasis was on more or less, not on science, but more or less on
humanities.
Yes, languages, history, and literature.
Do you remember the rise to power of the National Socialists in Germany?
Oh, yes. You know, my youth was during the time when the Republic of Weimar, in between, and there was a very rushy and revolutionary situation. We had, I very well remember the inflation, 1923, when my father called my family, please buy a kilo of butter, because we can't afford it tonight. The mark runs up to 1 billion or 3 billion mark, which was ridiculous. I mean, the currency was completely broken, and this was a situation. And then the communists and the rightists and the Nazi came up, and there was always fighting in the streets. So I remember this very well. My father, and certainly the family, was very conservative. They were what we call Deutschnational, you know, very patriotic and very religious. My mother was singing in the choir of the church, so this was the frame of education.
Which church did they belong to?
Protestant.
Was that Lutheran?
Yes, Lutheran. And I was, at the age of 10 years, I became a Boy Scout. And this had the most important impact on my education. You ask whether I remember. Certainly, it was 1933 when I was 15 years old. So very consciously, I experienced this change. Even I wasn't, or my parents, my father was never a member of the Nazi Party because he was you know, there were two proletarians for him. He was a middle-class conservative man, and they were too loud and too noisy and too this wasn't his level. So, but anyhow, when Hitler came to power, there was such a mess in Germany economy-wise and political-wise, that there was a hope that of Jesus Christ. Now we hope that there will be some success, because this first cabinet of Hitler was combined of Deutsche National, of the conservatives, and of the Nazis. So you couldn't see at that time, this is a strictly poor dictatorship of Hitler.
Why were the Boy Scouts so important to you?
This was just the big challenge of my youth, you know. We make expeditions every weekend, we lived in tents, and this was, it absorbed all the romantic imaginations of a boy.
You said that you saw street fighting. Yep. Did you see that in Stuttgart?
Yeah, there were riots. I mean, this was, but not very big. But there was always, you know, an unfriendly situation very often. If there was a demonstration or things like that, you know. Not every day, certainly. It would be horrible.
How strong was the left wing in Stuttgart?
Stuttgart was the Social Democrats, because there's a lot of industry around Stuttgart and accumulated in the area of Stuttgart. So the even the country, which was a more or less a very an agricultural country, farmers, but more which was more conservative or liberal. Stuttgart, the main city, the capital, was the majority was Social Democrats. It was workers.
Did the communists have any influence there?
The communists were there, no doubt, and they were, you know, they were very active and very dynamic, and certainly.
So, who do you think was to blame for the street violence in Stuttgart? Was it the Nazis, or was
all.
It the
all?
Now, when the National Socialists came to power, were there any big meetings that you witnessed in Stuttgart?
No, it was, you know, you mean meetings for
in the street, kind of like demonstrations?
No, they demonstrated their victory, and pretty soon there was no opposition. You know, there was a hope, and even there was a change. Even the communists. Changed, I don't know, maybe by force or voluntarily, to the Nazis. Both were extremists, you know, and both called for being socialists. Even the Nazi claimed to be socialists, or national socialists. So it took not very long, but actually in this, at the age of 15, I was not politically orientated. I was in my basketball, and that's it was. And I was a great athletic enthusiast. I did a lot of sports, so I was my actions were absorbed not by politics. They were absorbed by the Boy Scouts and by sports.
So, when the National Socialist government came into power, what effect did it have on you personally, if any?
None. This was normal life the next day. There's no change.
Did it change the education in the schools?
You know, you cannot change the classic Latin history. You cannot change. There might come, have come in later, a different aspect in weighing German history. For instance, one example, Charlemagne. Carl the Great. In the course of the change of education or the weighing of history from the aspect of the Nazis, Widukind, the great resistor to Charlemagne, or Carl the Great, was the outstanding historical figure. So, I mean, these were some aspects which came in, but the overall history you couldn't change, and there was no change. Okay, we sang the national anthem even more than before, but it was not the daily term went on as before.
What about the school teachers themselves? Could you tell whether or not they favoured or disfavoured the National Socialist government?
It's hard to say. We had some teachers which were you could feel that the Nazi didn't have very much sympathy with him. For instance, I had a teacher in mathematics, and this is one figure. The other ones were very neutral, and you could see he made some cynical jokes, but this wasn't. It was not a tremendous and tragic and traumatic opposition or the daily work at school went on as it did before.
What did your parents say to you about the government, if anything?
Oh, they just waited, what's going on, you know. But don't forget, we had 9 million unemployed. And there was, and the dream was it must be done something to get out of this economical mess. And pretty soon, there was success. Absolutely success. Even my father, he was several times asked to join the party. He never did till his death. And he also assisted, but there certainly he recognized some success at the beginning, there's no doubt, you know. And what happened behind the screen, all these force, this was secret. It was not in the open street.
Did your father's business affairs change under the
new government? No, not at all.
What about the local Lutheran church? Was that affected in any way?
No, this was. I had my confirmation before, and there was not at all a change. The change was 1 year later, when the Boy Scout. I was a Christian Boy Scout. And we were taken over by the Jungvolk. This is the younger Hitlerjugend branch. Our activities didn't change a bit. The only difference was we had a brown shirt instead of a gray shirt. The same leaders, the same unit. There was no change. But we were incorporated to this.
What was it called? The Jung what?
Jungvolk.
How do you spell it?
J-U-N-G-V-O-L-K.
Jungvolk.
Yeah.
Did you have any Jewish friends?
No, not my father had a Jewish friend. And even after there was no change. He talked with him. He didn't come. I mean, this was a... from business, they knew each other, and he was shaking hands, and so there was no change until this man disappeared once. But I can tell you, I was out at that time. I was already in the army, and I lost contact to my Stuttgart friends and communication.
Can you tell me how you came to be in the forces?
Yes, I wanted to become an officer. And I, you know, at that time, you have to undergo an examination. Because there were a lot of applicants, and by the way, I want to become an infantry regiment 13, which was an old traditional regiment. And I made my application, and 70 competitors did it. And we had to undergo 3 days examination with all kinds of activities, you know. There was psychological examination and educational where they proved your knowledge and your scientific level and science level and sport and everything.
Which year and was this?
This was 1930, early 36. And Then I was accepted, and right after the final examination at school, which we call Abitur, I was enlisted to the regiment as a what we call, you would call it a cadet. And I entered the regiment as a cadet in 1936.
What kind of training did you have as a cadet?
Oh, we were a normal company. We were in the normal company, and we were trained as a, you know, in all different steps, from the single to the group to the company, and exercises and all kinds of weapons, and as an infantryman. In addition to this, we had education by a lieutenant who took care for the cadets of the regiment. There were only four cadets in the regiment. And in addition to this, we had horseback riding and all things like that. And certainly some education on the structure of the army and some tactical things like that.
Whereabouts did the training take place?
At the regiment, in the caserne.
In the barracks?
In the barracks.
Which part of Germany was it, though?
This was in Ludwigsburg, near Stuttgart.
Did you like army life?
Yes, it was an absolute new challenge to me, and it was a challenge because it was a very rough education, and they really tried to get you to the limits of your physical and psychological limits. And for a young man, it was a challenge, no doubt. At that time, I didn't have any idea about flying, which came in later when I was at the officer school in Dresden. You know, when I came to the rank of a NCO cadet, from there on we had to go to the, we were sent to the officer school, to Dresden. We had some in Germany, and I came to Dresden, and this was a real officer school with a training, a tactical training, and in all facets of your profession. And at that time, there was nearby was a flying school, and a friend of mine, he was a pilot, and we met every Saturday over the weekend. And from there on, I got the idea of flying. I want to become a pilot. And then I made my application and was transferred to the Air Force. At that time, the Air Force didn't have, it was in a young stage of building up, the Air Force didn't have all the facilities and the capacity to train cadets as much as they needed in the Air Force. So they gave to the Navy, for instance, and to the Army, cadets which were earmarked to become Air Force officers later on. So I came 1938. I was transferred as a senior cadet, which is just before the lieutenant. I was transferred to the Air Force and started my flying training near Munich in Neubiberg.
Did the Luftwaffe have a better reputation with the public than the Wehrmacht?
No. I mean, the Wehrmacht had a good reputation, which went back to the Reichswehr. Reichswehr was a very well-trained, small, but a very well-trained force, absolutely neutral as far as party politics is concerned. And they had a high reputation in the country. And the success of in the army expanded, they still carried the reputation of the Reichswehr. Luftwaffe was Air Force was a brand new service. The first time, a new service, different uniforms, and it was considered a little bit sloppy. You know, we had a tie and we had half shoes and things like that. But this was just, pretty soon when an aircraft flew in the sky, they had their reputation, no doubt.
Because the reason I ask this is because in Britain at this time, the RAF had a certain glamour which the army didn't have.
No, that is not true to us. Not true to us.
So how did you actually get into the Luftwaffe? You made an application?
I made an application and an examination, you know, which dealt with your physical condition, certainly, and some special attitudes you should have. And I was happy to be selected and became a lieutenant in the Air Force, starting my flying training.
So you've suggested that discipline in the Luftwaffe wasn't as strict as...
You know, the Luftwaffe was a very technical force. And technical force has their own rights and rules and regulations. You know, it doesn't mean anything to turn the propeller in a like a Gleichschritt. You know, you have to discipline to the function, to your technical function, and I think we were educated in this direction.
At this time, did you think that a war was coming?
No, not at all. We were, you know, we were. That was the age of. 38 or 20, yeah, and we were absorbed by the daily duty, which was flying, and we were eager to fly, and certainly we watched the political situation, which was at that time Hitler had great success, you know, he absorbed Austria, Bohemia, and without any serious opposition from the world scenery, so. He realized maybe a dream of a historical dream of Germans for this big empire, no? But coming to a war, you know, the situation for war, my generation, and particularly the fathers of my generation, and everybody had experienced the war. And the World War I was a big, deep cut in the life of many, many people. And in every family, there was at least one, two members who got killed during that war. So there was no war enthusiastic. For Christ's sake, no war. This is the worst. So I think this is true till the outset of the war. There was no enthusiasm. You know, 1914, they were waving flags and hooray and so. No World War II. World War II... There was a big, depressed mood throughout the country. And, you know, what's going on? What is going on?
A sense of anxiety.
This is the one side. The other side is, if we go to war, and you, at that time I was a what we would call today a combat-ready fighter pilot, just finished my fighter training. Certainly, if there is a war... I want to be as a fighter pilot in a combat unit and be successful and do my duty. This is the next thing. We had to decide for the war, but the population as such was very much shocked by the war, no doubt.
Now, in the late 30s, some of the Luftwaffe went to the war in Spain.
Yeah, I was too young for that. But many friends of mine were in the Spanish War and the Spanish Civil War, and you know what they flew all the fighter pilots. They had their first successes or the shutdowns, and this is more or less this was a proving ground of their. But we had also losses in that.
Did some of them speak to you about what they had experienced?
Sure. You know, when they went down, this was very secret. But you cannot camouflage this forever, certainly. And we knew, and then when they came back, there was certainly a big discussion, and also a discussion about experience, for instance, which came out of the Spanish War. Mulders invented... introduced a new four-ship formation. You know, until then we flew three-ship. And Mulders developed in the Spanish War the four-ship with the idea one airplane attacks and the other one protects. You know, and this is very flexible in the air. He can attack, I protect. He attacks, or I attack and he protects me. So this is it was a flexible formation which was invented in the Spanish War.
Do you remember any specific experiences that comrades mentioned from the Spanish War to you?
We they talked about the armament and the weapon system on the other side was a rata, and it was not very very high level technology. There was they felt particularly with the 109 when the 109 came in, they felt to be superior to these airplanes.
What was your own political attitude towards the Spanish War?
We were informed that the communists will take over Spain. And Franco is defending Spain against the communism. So we favored certainly Franco's idea. People who were down there, pilots, on a very individual basis, sometimes said, for Christ's sake, I don't know whether we are on the wrong side. They saw the reality. And as far as they were able to do is, they were out in a camp or they didn't have too much touch on the overall situation. But some doubts came up at some individual pilots. But as a whole, I think we favored the idea to protect Spain for being turned over to communism. Because that would be a very, very great impact on Europe.
What was the attitude of yourself and your comrades in the Luftwaffe towards Britain at that time? Was Britain regarded as a threat or as an enemy?
Actually, not even in the higher staff. Until 1938, Britain was never considered to be a threat in military thinking and consideration. The threat, or the Air Force, was tailored against the threat of our immediate enemies, which was just across the border, France, Czechoslovakia, Poland, nothing else. And so the whole equipment was designed, We had short-range fighters. We didn't have a strategic bombers. Even there was one, General Weber, unfortunately, got killed by an air crash, by an aircraft crash. He was favoring a strategic bomber, which was never came to reality, not even during the war. There was one strategic bomber, the Heinkel 144, but it never worked. The emphasis was a medium bomber and short-range fighters and a tactical force with 287 and even the reconnaissance was not tailored to those distances in a strategic way. So, in other words, again, I don't think that Great Britain was considered to be a threat until very shortly before the war.
Did you know very much about the RAF?
No. Well, certainly we knew some equipment. We knew but in those days it was very, this was a biplane, some this type of thing. We didn't put too much emphasis, as we do now, to have a very detailed knowledge about the weapon system on the other side. You have to know that exactly in those days.
Did you get any visits from any VIPs to your unit? Did you meet Hitler or Goering or any other big people?
No, there was certainly, depends on which, for instance, Jagdschwader Richthofen, a very traditional wing station near Berlin, when some political leaders or big VIPs, big wheels, visited Berlin, and certainly they were taken out to. This was a propaganda wing, it was a very good wing. I don't want to degrade it, but anyhow, they had a tradition, they had a name, and they had a good location. station near to Berlin, they had